Bill Fennelly's here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk.
We're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Manuk owes $5. Could not get back in the chair quick enough. That's okay. We'll forgive him.
I just wiped out hard, too. Wiped out hard.
What's that?
I wiped out hard.
Oh, yeah, I bit it. Oh,
what? See, what people don't see, Drew, is I'm obviously doing the show now at Dave Manuk's house in beautiful River Heights. And what people don't see is when we have these commercial breaks, Dave does the show upstairs, and I do the show downstairs here in the great room, as they call it. And, you know, people don't see what we do is we basically just bash you, Drew, for 2 minutes. So there's so much content that it's tough for Dave to run all the way upstairs.
Yeah. I'm still usually well into my rant by the time I get a chance to get back upstairs. And as he goes, oh, Boston Pizza, and I'm like, oh, I got to go.
That's look, there's no bromance quite like the bromance the two of you share, and it's a beautiful thing. And if the heart of that bromance is insulting me, then the least I can do is let you guys have the little pleasure and joy that you get in your lives. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Whatever you need, however you need it, Bernstein's Deli is there to help you out. Be sure to check out bernsteinsdeli.com for more information. Illegal Curve question of the day. It's at the bottom of the ticker for those of you joining us live on YouTube right now. With the Jets roster as it is currently constructed and when healthy, assume Wheeler in the lineup, what is their ceiling and what does the Jets ceiling become if they upgrade the defense ahead of Monday's trade deadline? Dave, first I'll let you jump on that question to start.
Well, and it's interesting because that's, as you and I were talking about that during the break, and we're trying to save all that great content for now, but we sometimes do a little preamble in advance, and there's so much uncertainty as to what the rest of the league looks like. And when I was talking about that with Jason Bell, I said, like, the idea of this National League versus American League before there was, you know, interleague play in baseball, it's very similar to that. You don't know what other leagues look like. I mean, again, and it's funny because as you talked about watching that Anaheim game last night, I turned on the Columbus, Florida game randomly 2 nights ago. And I felt like I was watching a completely different sport. Like, I didn't really know what was going on. And it was weird because, you know, we're so immersed in hockey, but we're so immersed in Canadian hockey right now. And it feels like a completely separate entity. So it's very difficult. And as he was, like I said before, when we were talking about it, listed off all these teams that are fantastic, you know, the Tampas, the Colorados, the Vegases. But it's very hard to know what it's going to look like in the playoffs because you saw what happened with Colorado last year. I mean, they ended up using Michael Hutchinson as their goaltender, right? So you're always, there's so much uncertainty in playoff hockey and what, you know, what an injury and how, I mean, the Jets are a perfect example, Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele in the bubble, right? To get into the bubble. There's so many variables that you have to take into account that come into play. So I can't tell you how the Jets, what their ceiling is, because I think the Jets, again, like I've said, you've got a goaltender who can win you a Stanley Cup. You've got a forward group that has its flaws, has its warts. We've talked about them quite a bit. But they still are very talented. And again, if you can upgrade your defense, get a Savard and an Oleksiak, like something like that, like really kind of give yourself that depth, well, now you've upgraded your defense. So to me, you for sure can get out of the Canadian division with that group with an upgrade on D. And if you get out of the Canadian division, again, this Jets team has shown some amount of a resiliency. We'll see what they can do. But I think you can probably compete. It would be interesting. It'd be tough. Colorado, Vegas, not easy, but you know, they may have to beat each other up to get to the point anyway. So again, you know, you've got all these variables that you have to factor in. And that's why I said, does Kevin Cheveliev want to, and Jay was talking about it too, do you want to just say, well, you know, we'll stand pat and see what happens next year when things seem, quote, more certain? Or do you go for it? And again, like I said, not go for it in the sense that you're trading away the future. Again, I wouldn't advocate trading away any top tier prospects from the Winnipeg Jets organization. I think you've got a defensive core that's, you know, kind of like what the offensive core was a few years ago, young and growing. And then in a few years, you don't want it to age out. You know what I mean? You don't want, unfortunately for the Jets, you don't want it to be too much of a gap between, but I don't think you will. I think you'll be fine again next year when you have Hainola in the lineup regularly, you have Sandberg potentially regularly in the lineup. You've got Chisholm you know, nipping at the at their heels. I think you've got Kovacevic. You've got a lot of options defensively. And again, you're not going to find places for all these guys to play. That's the thing, right? You're not going to have space for everybody. But I think eventually you're going to have these guys come up through the organization probably next year. So you don't want to necessarily get rid of that, especially because remember, Derek Forbort is a free agent after this year. You're going to have to find money to sign Neil Pionk. So you've got DeMelo signed, obviously, and Stanley, and there's the uncertainty with the draft, with the expansion draft. To me, it's a function of if you reward this group with a small move, I think personally that you at minimum get out of the Canadian division. And then once you've gotten out of the Canadian division, if your team's feeling good and you've got Connor Hellebuyck in net, I mean, the sky's kind of the limit. And to me, that's why I would, if you can do it, if you're Cheveldayoff and you can swing that a move or two on Monday to improve your defensive group, I can't see why you don't do it.
Yeah, and so, and the big theme there is that there are going to be big changes for this Jets team next year. Like, they're not losing any of their superstars, but Dave mentioned, like, Derek Forbort, right? Like, there's always the chance that the Jets, you know, bring him back. You know, Neil Pionk is a guy that they're obviously going to have to sign to the extension. But there's some – it's more so in the forward group. Like, you have to look at it big picture. Like, not just defense, not just forwards, not just goaltending. Like where this Jets team is going. And this Jets team is trending in the right direction, right? Like, you know, after, you know, the 2018-19 season when they were, you know, knocked out by St. Louis, you know, it wasn't really sure, like, have the Jets kind of, you know, are they kind of stagnated, right? And the way that, you know, certain guys have developed this year, like, namely, you know, players like Mason Appleton, you know, the Logan Stanleys, you know, Dave mentions, you know, Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, Johnny Kovacevic, Declan Chisholm, like, there's a lot of good D prospects playing for the Moose right now. So you have to look at this, like, you know, the Jets might lose one of Andrew Kopp or Adam Lowry, right? Mm-hmm. Just simply because of the expansion draft, right, guys? So, I mean, you could lose a Dylan DeMello if you acquire a defenseman with term. Like, if the Jets acquired, you know, Josh Manson, DeMello would probably be the guy that's exposed. I think we'd all agree with that, right? Because you're not exposing Morrissey or Pionk, and you're not going to give up a first-round pick for Josh Manson and then expose him in the expansion draft. That wouldn't make sense. So I almost think you don't want to overcomplicate this, right? Like, Chevy has given up first-round picks before when he thought his team had a good chance at winning. And as Dave said, you look at that division, and yes, Toronto is the best team on paper, but I don't think the Leafs are that much better than the Jets. Like, is Jack Campbell going to be able to maintain the way he's playing? I think, you know, we'd all agree that he's a great goaltender, but I think we'd all agree that Hellebuck's better, and he's the best goalie right now in the North Division. So even though you might not be like one of those top-tier teams like Colorado or Tampa Bay or Vegas, I think you do think you have a shot. So I don't think you want to overcomplicate it. If you have the right move there, you know, if it's David Savard, Josh Manson, I mean, those are the big ones we've been talking about. I think you do give up the first round pick.
You know, we know the names that have been bandied about because they're the names that are being bandied about in cities, you know, across the NHL that have playoff aspirations. You know, the way Kevin Cheveldayoff works, though, you know, I wonder if he's got, you know, he does operate sort of stealth-like. You know, yep. We remember Paul Stastny. His name wasn't being bandied about. Nobody talked about Paul Stastny.
Well, St. Louis, just going to say, Drew, you remember St. Louis was, what, 1 point out of a playoff spot or two points out of a playoff spot? That's why it was so surprising back in 2018, because they were still making their push for the playoffs.
Right. It's just a realistic general manager in Doug Armstrong who you know, is confident enough in his position to know what he had in the team and knew that they weren't good enough to you know, really get there, or if they were going to get there, they were going to be first round fodder. You know, that's what you want. You want a confident general manager who's got a realistic opinion about the team. I mean, we were a little bit broken record on this one. It is such a bizarre season because, you know, you don't know what is really out there outside of your own division. I mean, we know that the Jets are going to have to go through two of Toronto, Montreal, Edmonton if they want to represent the North Division. You know that, you know, Colorado and Vegas and, you know, the Minnesota Wild have been playing great hockey as well. You know, I think up until yesterday, I think they got beat up yesterday.
Oh, they got punked. Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Like 9-1 or something like that.
Yeah, something ridiculous. Just one of those games where you can tell, sort of like the 7-1 Jets loss in Montreal, one of those games where you have absolutely nothing. But you know that they're going to be, you know, it's going to be a fight to get out of the West Division, you know, with Colorado and with Vegas and with Minnesota. Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
Just a little bit of news out of Jets skate from Montreal. They're going to use, I'm reading Mitchell Clinton from Jets TV. He's saying that same lineup for the Jets tonight against the Habs and Connor Hellebuyck in net. So same group that they had last game. Just for
no surprise, there's nobody really else left right now. You know, with Wheeler out, there's no real question marks as to who else they would bring into the lineup. So no surprise there from the Jets skate. But good update nonetheless, Dave. Appreciate that. But as I was saying, the West, the West Division, Colorado, Vegas, Minnesota, those are the three best teams. They're going to have to battle with one another to get out of that division. You look at the Central Division right now, Carolina, Tampa, Florida, the three best teams there. And then, Nashville is currently holding down fourth spot in that division. You look at the East, Washington, the Islanders, Pittsburgh. I mean, Boston is in a playoff spot a little bit behind those guys, but who wants to face the Boston Bruins in the first round? You never do, especially with the perfection line there. So it's going to be there's no easy division to come out of, which makes it so fascinating to sort of, talk about the arms race that's going to take place for upgrades at the trade deadline. And that's why, I mean, I think all these general managers are probably, are eager to do so, because that once you get out of your division, I don't think there's anybody that's necessarily head and shoulders above, because it's been such a struggle just to get to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I would say, this is just me personally. I think Colorado and Tampa Bay are in that upper tier, but I don't think they're head and shoulders above anybody. But those are the two best teams, in my opinion. I think Vegas is right behind there. But you're absolutely right, Drew. There isn't necessarily one clear-cut team in any of the four divisions. And I don't think this year you can say that, there's noticeably one division that's the most, competitive or the best division. Scott Burnside is joining us now, so Drew, I'll let you bring in Scott.
There we go. Scott Burnside of The Athletic joins us to talk about the upcoming NHL trade deadline coming up on Monday at 2 o'clock Central Time, 3 o'clock Eastern. Scott, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me aboard. So I love the fire going. I'm feeling kind of cozy. So it's perfect.
I was inspired. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press had a fire in his background when we had him on the show a few weeks back. And so I was inspired by that. A little bit of jealous. I had fire envy. So as a result, I've created my own.
It's perfect. Nice time.
It's also a little chilly here in the Peg, Scott.
Well, in Georgia, it's rainy here today. So I could even go for the fire just to take some of the dampness off. So
what you're saying, it's a rainy night in Georgia?
Something like that.
Okay, there you go. Scott, obviously, we brought you on to talk about the upcoming trade deadline on Monday. And, I guess maybe Dave's fire is a bit of an analogy. Is it going to be sort of calm and cool like it is there in Georgia right now? Or is it going to be all hot and bothered like the fire behind Dave's head? It's been quiet, so far, more or less. A couple moves here or there, but nothing like we're used to seeing, in the days leading up to a trade deadline.
Yeah, I wish I had a real sense of it. I know Pierre LeBrun and I have been talking about the trade deadline now for weeks on our podcast, and I think the consensus is that the Seattle expansion draft, the flat cap, the divisional play, even with the reduction in the quarantine for players coming from the U.S. to Canada from 14 to 7 days, that's still a big mouthful at this stage of the season in terms of bringing a player in. I thought that Mark Bergevin was insightful for him to acquire Eric Staal when he did. And now he's been in the lineup for a couple of games. And so, but you have to factor that in if you're Kyle Dubas in Toronto, and obviously Kevin Cheveldayoff in Winnipeg. How do you maneuver the next 48 hours, and what is the, on top of the value of a player, and let's, whether you're talking a Taylor Hall, whoever you're talking about, to factor in the extra week where you don't have access to that player. And of course, the Jets went through that earlier with Pierre-Luc Dubois. So I think it all conspires to really tamp down what could happen by mid-afternoon Monday. I will say this, the Islanders get in early, Lou Lamoriello 2 years in a row now with a bold move at the deadline. And I like the Kyle Palmieri, Travis Zajac ad. And I like it for both those teams. I thought that's a pretty good return for Tom Fitzgerald in New Jersey. So there are teams that want and need to make moves. And I think it will happen. And I don't I just don't think it's going to be the sort of the landslide of things that we might have anticipated. Of course, what's going on in Vancouver is another issue there. You see Tanner Pearson sign the extension. So I just think it's going to be quiet, but I don't think it means that there won't be meaningful moves. And there's still pressure on GMs, in spite of all that stuff, to make moves if they need to. There's still pressure on Kevin Cheveldayoff. There just is. And so, you know, can he get something done? I guess we'll find out. But I think it's going to be fascinating, even if the number of trades is sort of more modest than we would normally expect at this time of year.
Yeah, and Scott, just sticking with that, you know, you were mentioning that you think it's going to be a little bit more quiet and we're not going to see a landslide of moves. Like, if you had to pick one or two teams that you think might be, you know, more active than others, I mean, the Jets could obviously be one of those teams, but, you know, going back to last year, Tampa Bay was obviously one of the more active teams. Like, do you see that, like, could that be the Boston Bruins? Could that be the St. Louis Blues? You hear that they're going to be in this weird position where they could be buyers and sellers when they're going to move, like, maybe Mike Hoffman, Vince Dunn, but they could also, you know, be out there trying to acquire a piece. Like, Taylor Hall's name has been mentioned, but, like, do you see one team making three or four moves, or do you think each, like, going back to what you said before, the Islanders have already made their move. Like, we saw the Leafs acquire Riley Nash. It doesn't seem like, you know, there's one team like a Tampa Bay like last year.
Yeah. And that may be the case. I think what will be interesting, and I know my pal Pierre LeBrun sort of floated this idea, but this notion that, you know, if you're a team like Toronto and it's sort of dollar in, dollar out, and I think sometimes we imagine, well, that means if you trade, let's say they trade for Taylor Hall, that the dollars that go out have to go back to Buffalo, that it may not be that way. The dollars may go out to a team like Detroit, or it may go out to a team like Chicago. We already saw Chicago in a deal with Florida for a couple of young prospects. I thought a good deal for Stan Bowman there, but it creates cap room for Bill Zito in South Florida. I'm fascinated to see what the Panthers do. A, they've created some more space. They already had space, but they've now created some roster space. But Connolly, they've been wanting to move in for some time, didn't really fit there. Of course, with Aaron Ekblad out for the rest of the season, the obvious, you know, could you bring in a David Savard from Columbus, who Bill Zito knows very well from his time there? But could you bring in an impact forward to play somewhere in that top nine now? And I think Bill Zito's in a position, he's, you know, he's already traded a couple of young players, but he's not touching. I don't think we'll see many more sort of top young assets go out from Florida, but that's a really interesting team because they're really good, but he's still taking the long view in South Florida. It's his first year there. So I'm curious about them. Are there teams that use teams like Chicago or Detroit to park some salary so they can make those other moves? So it may be one of those situations where there are two or three things at play for Kyle Dubas to bring in the player that he wants. And part of the, you know, how so strange the last two or three weeks. I mean, a month ago, weren't we all in on Nashville selling off everyone, right? Kai Sekholm was at the top of our big board at The Athletic, and Mikael Granlund, I know people sort of connected him with the Leafs. Like, if you're David Poile, and that injury list in Nashville is unbelievable, but if you can hang on, and I do like them, of those teams sort of hovering around the fourth spot there, it's pretty critical for Nashville to be in the playoffs. So I won't be surprised if David Poile isn't the seller that we thought he was going to be. Arizona is another team. They've got, like, I think, nine UFAs potentially in that roster. Bill Armstrong's in his first trade deadline with the Coyotes. They need help, a ton of help in terms of restocking that shelf there. And they're really not a playoff team, right? I mean, I know St. Louis has made it interesting by playing so poorly, but they're not really a playoff team, and they're not a team you can imagine knocking off Colorado or Vegas at the top, with all due respect to the Coyotes. So is that a team where you see some of those parts? Alex Goligoski is having a nice season for them. Could be a nice fit anywhere. I think he'd be a nice fit in Winnipeg, perhaps. But certainly teams looking to add on the blue line, Boston's another one. So I'm curious to see what happens with that team. And it's just – it's so fluid. I think it's exciting – even if at the end of the day, it's only a handful of deals.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Our guest is Scott Burnside of The Athletic. We're talking about the upcoming NHL trade deadline. Monday afternoon, 2 p.m. Central, is when deals need to be completed by.
You know, Scott, this is such an unusual year, and there's so much uncertainty in terms of you know, we talk about it all the time here on this show, is that all we really focus on is the North Division. We don't have a clue what is happening down south. And it's just, you have this tunnel vision. You see what's happening. You watch the Jets every night or almost every second night, and you see all the other Canadian teams playing. You really don't know what's going on in the other divisions. And I think part of my curiosity and what you're thinking about this is, I mean, you know, in terms of the price for trades right now, you know, we're hearing, you know, for a guy like David Savard, it could be a first. There's a lot of uncertainty even with what the draft looks like. But do you think that the uncertainty of what playing these other teams also is factoring in for these GMs? Because if you're the Jets or the Leafs and you think, hey, we're the best team in the Canadian division, that might be great, but you might get schmeiced by, you know, Vegas. You know, you don't know what that's going to look like. So how much do you think that plays in to the GM's thinking for this season?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure it factors in all that much, because with the first two rounds in the playoffs within the division, and so what do you know? You know your own division in a way that you've never known it before. I live in Georgia, but I'm fascinated by the North Division. Every single night, you're sort of looking around, and I don't see the top four changing at all. I just don't see that happening. But the question, you know, the every night it's, okay, are we going to see Winnipeg, Montreal? Is it going to be Winnipeg, Edmonton? How do those potential series, you know, how do they look? And I think if you're Kyle Dubas, or if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff or Kenny Holland, Mark Bergevin's already made his, I think, a nice move for the Habs. You got a chance to win two rounds to get to a final four. And I think that's when you worry about, oh, you know, how do we stack up against Vegas, or do we have to worry about if Vegas is going to make an ad, or, you know, Colorado. I love the Patrick Nemeth ad, and I covered the Avs Nashville series in 18. And Patrick Nemeth had come from Dallas, really interesting guy, solid. You know, he's a nice fit there. And I think there are going to be those are the kinds of moves. It's the fit, because you have such a limited time to bring in a player and have him fit your group. But I don't think you can pay attention outside your division. You get a chance to go to the Final Four by winning two rounds in your division. You played each other 100 times. So I think that's where you have to have a comfort zone, or a sense of, well, how do we stack up, and what do we need to deal with the division first? And I think there are a lot of people around hockey, not just fans, but maybe players and coaches and GMs, who really do not have a huge sense of what's going on outside their division, because they don't need to. And the demand is, know your own business. And then if you get to the Final Four, that's pretty good. Then you can start to worry, geez, maybe we don't stack up so well, or wish we'd had another
game. You know, Scott, you mentioned that, you know, despite being in Atlanta, that you pay attention to the North Division, because, you know, it's been a fascinating division to watch, like a lot of these divisions have. You know, obviously when you're in the eye of the storm, like we are in Winnipeg, you know, you're so Jets focused. I'm curious what your opinion is of the Jets sort of being out of the eye of the storm, as I mentioned, being able to maybe take a step back and take a more, you know, fulsome view of the team as we sit here a couple days before the trade deadline.
Yeah, no, I right from the get-go, and I know, you know, everyone does their predictions, and I like the Jets in the top four right from the get-go. I felt people maybe had undervalued the group up front. I thought they'd undervalued, even though, you know, the defense is, you know, was a work in progress from last year through into this season. I really liked, I just like the Jets team. I like how they're put together. I like how they're coached. I have zero issues with the Dubois deal. It's, you know, it's a slow process, right? It's a young player, the quarantine, fitting in. But having watched very closely Columbus in that play-in round against Toronto, and then watching them against Tampa, which was, even though it was five games, felt like it was 100 and sure, wildly compelling. If the Jets get that kind of Dubois in the playoffs, they are going to be an absolute handful. And I like them. You know, if you bring in a David Savard, if you could do that, that would be great. If you can't, I don't even know if it matters that much. I just think they're going to be a real handful. And the depth up front, assuming by the time playoffs roll around that there is, you know, good health or overall health up front there. I don't think there's a lot to separate those top four teams. I think Montreal, even though it's been some stutter steps there, that team is so deep, and they roll the four lines, and Carey Price love that back end. That team is going to be, you know, who doesn't want to see Toronto, Montreal, but whoever the Habs play, it's going to be fascinating. And Edmonton, to me, is completely on the other end. If you watch that team, and I watch them almost all the time, it's so, if that doesn't get done by McDavid, Draisaitl, and Tyson Barrie and Mike Smith, what a story. But that's it. That team, there's just so little else going on with that team. I had this conversation with somebody the other day. I said, who can they beat in the North Division in best of seven? I don't know if they can beat anyone. I mean, obviously they could, but they're so top heavy mm-hmm. that I just think the other three teams in the North are much deeper and more balanced. Maybe in the end it won't matter, but that's what I like about the Jets.
Scott, wanted to ask you, you know, about what's going on with, you know, the Vancouver Canucks and COVID. And I realize that, you know, COVID is, it's, we all have COVID fatigue at this point. And you mentioned health of some other teams earlier, but we wanted to ask you, you know, Dave and I were, we knew that we were having you on and we wanted to ask you about this. And I'm not sure if you and Pierre LeBrun have talked about this specifically on the Two Man Advantage podcast, but obviously I'm sure that you've talked about the Canucks, but How worried do you think other teams are across the league, not just in Canada, but in the U.S. as well, in terms of, you know, what's going on with that Canucks situation? Because as it slowly developed, you know, you saw four players, six players, eight players, and then essentially it's the entire team, including members of the coaching staff. So how concerned do you think, you know, other teams around the league are of what's happening? Because you have to think, you know, if this happens, you know, towards the end of the regular season going into the playoffs, this is going to be a bit of a nightmare. Obviously, we don't hope it happens, but just how what type of impact do you think what's happened to the Canucks has had on kind of the rest of the league as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and it's been so troubling to watch, and I think it was sort of encouraging, you know, degrees of encouragement, and I thought it was important that the Canucks, you know, had that their media availability and brought in medical officials to help explain what was going on there. And I know in talking to people from the league, right, all the way through this, they insisted that they felt Vancouver was going to be able to finish out the 56-game schedule. They felt that the idea, and I think a lot of us had imagined, what if they can't play anymore? And I thought that was a realistic question to ask. The league has always been steadfast that they felt that they were going to get through it and that they were going to be able to finish out the schedule. And you know, hopefully they're healthy enough that they can do that. And it is troubling, certainly with the variant and how quickly it spread through that team. And the timing is, again, you go back to the beginning of the season and you think of the Dallas Stars. It wasn't the variant, but it was a similar kind of situation where I think there were at one point 17 players that tested positive in Dallas. And that team never recovered. I don't see them making the playoffs, and they just their schedule and everything that happened as a result of that has contributed to a very difficult season for them. Canucks, I think, were already out of the playoff situation. And I don't know how it will feel for the rest of the North Division when the Canucks get back into it. I have to assume, though, that the protocols be very closely monitored and watched. So I don't worry about that too much. And I think, frankly, by the time that you get to a point where you get to the Final Four and you have the final Canadian team ready to play, to me, the interesting part will be, you know, where is Canada at vis-a-vis the border? How we've already seen the government, the protocols change for NHL teams. Is there going to be a possibility for it's not a conference final, but the Final Four involving Canadian team to play somewhere in Canada? Will Toronto have to go to Buffalo? Will Winnipeg have to go and play in Minnesota? I don't know if anyone knows the answers to that. But I think that there's enough time that I think certainly when you look at the United States and the way the vaccine rollout, I'll be shocked if by the time the playoffs start, frankly, that there aren't a high percentage of NHL players and staff and coaches who haven't already been vaccinated in the United States. That's just where we're at right now. In Canada, I don't know whether we're going to get there or not. And I think that's, you know, the NHL is working overtime trying to figure out, well, what are we going to do at that point? But there's a little bit of runway there, but it's certainly been more than a bit sobering with what's going on in Vancouver. And it does sound like players are getting healthy now. And, You know, I mean, it sounds trite, but that's all that matters, right? If they don't play another game, does it really matter? But it certainly has been a very sobering part of this season at this juncture.
You know, Scott, you mentioned Winnipeg and Minnesota in your last answer, and normally Jets fans are very focused on their closest rival from a proximity perspective in the Central. Now, obviously, the Wild are in the West, and they're in the Wild West, and essentially they're third. They seem to be pretty set in a playoff position. And what is, you had a chance to talk to GM Bill Guerin last week, and really, what is his mindset? Because again, a lot of people, like I said, in Winnipeg are lost focus of what's happening with what I, like I said, was their normal division rival. But Minnesota seems to kind of have taken this big leap forward. Are they a team that's going to continue to roll along? Like, how does Bill Guerin view what his team is right now?
I hadn't called him this morning after they got beat 9-1 last night. So I'm sure his viewpoint this morning is probably a little bit more grim, but no, I think the Wild are one of the great stories. I thought the Wild would be, you know, sort of in that hunt for the four spot, sort of the default playoff spot in the West. And, they've had some young players who really obviously have stepped forward, Kaprizov, and the goaltending has been, notwithstanding last night, their goaltending has been really good. And, you know, Bill Guerin's not going to, you know, he's got some issues, right? He's got Matt Dumba. What are you going to do with him between now and the expansion draft? He's got, you know, everyone assumed once Brodin got the extension that they would at some point trade Matt Dumba. My sense of what the Wild would are doing now is this is like found money. I'm with you, Dave. They're going to be a playoff team, and they're going to play a really good team in Colorado or Vegas in the first round. Hard to imagine they could win that, but that's going to be great experience for those kids in Minnesota. And I really like how Dean Evason has handled that bench. Listen, that there's been a culture issue in Minnesota for a long time. And we're seeing now how culture changes with a team, you know, with all due respect to Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, you know, Mikko Koivu is gone, you went to Columbus very briefly and then retired. There has been a change there. And so the guys that sort of ruled the roost and played all those important minutes, they're not in that role now. And I think this is going to be a great learning experience. You know, every team evolving would love this chance, right? Even if you get waxed by Colorado or Vegas, this is going to be an important moment for the Minnesota Wild. And I think Bill Guerin's done a really nice job early on there. And Dean Evason, what a nice job for a guy pretty low profile when it comes to NHL coaches. To me, right, you know, I don't know where you put Bill Guerin and Dean Evason for GM of the year and coach of the year, but to me, they've got to be in the discussion given what has happened there, and not just where they are, but how they got there and some of the young players who've been really able to step forward and grow.
And Scott, we got to give a shout out to Flin Flon, my dad's hometown.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes. It was that's exciting. In fact, I had some conversation with Bobby Clark and his family the other day. We were working on a story about the Humboldt Broncos, and so yes, that's an obvious shout out, and happy to do it.
Yeah, Scott, my dad is the second most famous person to come out of Flin Flon after Bobby Clark. My dad was a math professor at the University of Winnipeg, so I was always tell him that he's the second most famous person.
Very nice.
Scott Burnside is the national writer for The Athletic. Scott, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Hopefully it'll be an entertaining next 48 or so hours ahead of the trade deadline. We look forward to reading all your work in The Athletic. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Scott.
There you go. Scott Burnside joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Connor Hellebuck says he's playing the best hockey of his career. We'll play you the video. We'll hear what he says. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard!
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal, starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Winnipeg Jets goaltender Connor Hellebuyck was on the NHL Network yesterday talking about his game this season, and he thinks he's playing the best hockey of his career. Here's what Connor Hellebuyck had to say.
I just want to ask you to assess your game this year, how you feel, where your game is at, and things that you're still wanting to work on in this season.
No, I felt my game has just been ramping up since day one. It's just this process. It's not easy. I mean, not having fans, and there's a lot of adapts that we had to do and go through. And this division is a high scoring division, so you really got to temper your expectations and make sure you're giving your team a chance to win every single night. And for me, I feel like I've done that, and I feel like I've put myself in a really good position to continue every single day where you can watch my improvement. And so I feel the best I've ever played is this year. And I'm really looking forward to getting some of these bad bounces that keep happening to me, getting that out of the game. And when the playoffs come around, hopefully it's smooth sailing.
You make a great point about how high scoring this division is. You almost understand now what Grant Freer used to say when the Edmonton Oilers might win 7-5. He gave up five, but he'd be like, hey, we still scored seven. That's all that mattered. We got the W.
Well, exactly. I think maybe a little less than a month ago, we played the Edmonton and we beat them 6-5, I believe. And I came out of that game thinking that was one of the best games I've played this year. Even though I gave up five, I still felt really good in the net. I made a lot of good saves. So being realistic with myself, obviously I don't want to give up five, so I'm going to try to learn from that. But being realistic, that it is about winning. And especially this year when the fans aren't even there, they want to see their team winning.
Interesting comments from the Winnipeg Jets goaltender there, I thought, in saying that this is the best he's played, that he feels as though he's played. And we know Connor Hellebuyck is always positive when he addresses the media. But I did find that to be particularly interesting, given that he's coming off a Vezina Trophy winning season. But I also just saw a tweet from Jay Fresh Hockey, courtesy our buddy Scott Billick. He also retweeted it, saying that Connor Hellebuyck has now overtaken Andre Vasilevsky in goals saved above average this season for the first time. So maybe there's something to be what Connor Hellebuyck just said in his interview that we just played on the NHL Network.
Yeah, and you know the 36 saves that he made against Montreal probably helped with that, right, guys? But nobody should be surprised that he's leading goals saved above expectations because, of course, he led last year, right? So Andrei Vasilevsky's up there, I think, in the Vezina conversation. Philip Grubauer, I think you have to throw Jack Campbell in there, guys. I mean, that's a debate probably for another segment, but certainly his 10 wins in a row are not bad. I thought it was really funny that he talked about the bounces, right? Because you know that Hellebuck hates that. And we just saw one with Paul Byron on Thursday night, right, Dave? And yeah. I think the thing that I love, I mean, if you think back to Nikolai Habibulin, right? That was the thing with Habibulin. Like, he hated getting scored on. And you hear that with some of the Jets players talking about Hellebuck in practice. And you know that specifically the goals that are the quote-unquote soft goals or the fluky goals, you know those are the ones that, you know, irk Hellebuck the most. So he's such an honest guy, and that comes across, you know, whether he's on the NHL network or he's doing some of these Zoom calls. Like, he legitimately knows that how talented he is, but he also wants to stop every save and he wants to be even better. So when you hear a guy talking about wanting to be even better and he's already the best, then look out, because if you're facing him in the playoffs and he's able to steal a couple games, you know, that's something that we definitely have not seen yet, aside from, you know, the 2018 playoffs. But yeah, I mean, Hellebuck is, there's no question that he's an honest guy and he's hard on himself.
Yeah. And the only thing I'd add to that is that, you know, this is the way he's been since I've been covering him when he was with the Manitoba Moose. And I found him to be very forthright always. Like, I always found that, like, you know, and it's funny because it came across as like people would be like, what is this guy talking about? Like, you know, you just let in five goals. How could you be playing some of your best hockey? But he was like that in the AHL. Like, not, it comes across as a bit of bravado, but it really isn't. It's usually, he's a fairly good assessor. And he's really, and by that I mean, like, he has a mindset. Like, he doesn't want to introduce that negativity into the atmosphere, whatever you want to call it. And I think what he does is he just keeps himself, like, you know, self-talk, right? And it's the idea of, like, he's, you know, after the game, you always see him. We used to go there. He'd be talking to Wade Flaherty. Literally, like, seconds after the game ended, they'd be assessing, you know, what was going on in his game. And he's a guy who's just tried to make improvements year after year after year. And we've seen it. And again, you go from being, well, Mark Dumont with his giving us Mike envy again is back. So we'll save the Connor Hellebuck talk for after, because now we got to talk about Mark's very impressive.
Mark's got the best setup in the business.
Yeah, the team paid for it. So, I mean, if not, you know what they told me at first? They're like, yeah, we're going to have to send you a background because it looks kind of prison-y right now. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fair enough. So right now they, I mean, they're not paying rent, but they took over a room. The Canadians own one of the rooms in my home. So, good news.
That's nice that they at least gave you a nice background looking there, because it does look sharp. As you know, you speak about dungeon. I mean, I'm literally in my electrical room in my house, and I've had to, you know, try and fancy it up a little bit with some photos and some
right,
you know, paraphernalia behind me, because otherwise it would really be it would double as a great place for a horror movie where I am. I don't have a fireplace with a quite like Dave behind me.
I was just gonna say, Dave's got the setup now. That looks proper, although that's gas, right, Dave? You're not rocking a full-on fire in your room.
In fact, it is a TV.
Oh, even better. Well, there you go. So the illusions. Yeah, exactly. So how's it going, guys?
Good, Mark. How are you? Mark Dumont from Montreal joins us to talk about tonight's Jets-Habs game, the second of a two-game series. You know, Mark, we got to start on the injury front for the Montreal Canadiens, because that certainly is a hot topic there, unfortunately. Brendan Gallagher, let's start with him, as he's out long-term. You know, broken finger, if I'm not mistaken. Do you expect that he's going to be ready come playoff time, or do you think it's really going to be touch and go between now and then to see if he's ready for that first round series?
They haven't actually come to a conclusion of what the game plan is. Right now, they're actually waiting. It might necessitate surgery, and we haven't gotten to that point yet. So the logic here, and it's kind of not bad in the sense that if he does come back for the playoffs, which is the plan, it's actually a huge bonus. Like, we saw the Leafs yesterday, the reason they got Riley Nash, I mean, that was just purely playoffs, right? And you get the long-term in between. So given that the North Division's already more or less decided, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I mean, I see who's going to make the playoffs. It's clear which four teams are going to make the playoffs and which aren't. This could be seen as a kind of a win, believe it or not, because now you can actually move. The Habs are really tight on the cap, so they need depth. They need better defensemen. They probably need a fourth line center. So this might work out. That being said, guys, I'm not going to fool anyone by saying we won't miss Brendan Gallagher. He's so important. I mean, it's not just that he scores goals, guys. It's the way he plays, right? Like, you know, if you're 6 foot two and you're watching little Brendan Gallagher eat 30 pounds of Sherwood per night, you got to go to net. So that part I feel will be missed, but it gives opportunities. Like for now, Kotkaniemi's playing on the top line, so it's giving big minutes to younger players, and that's exciting.
Okay, Mark, before we get into anybody else, I have to be the one that asked about Cole Caulfield, aka Cole Caulfield. Like, this is, you just can't like make this stuff up, right? Like, he wins the Hobie Baker Award, then he makes his debut with the Laval Rocket. And I was reading that, you know, the game was broadcast on RDS and TSN 690. He scores two goals and one assist. I only saw one of the goals, but it was a beautiful one-timer. Like, does that mean that, you know, he's going to go into the lineup for the Habs tonight and score a hat-trick against the Jets?
You know, I really, like, it's hard not to overhype him. You know, guys, you know that prospects fail oftentimes, but with Caulfield, I mean, is exactly what the Habs needed, right? They need, I think you guys would probably agree, when you look at the Habs roster, there's missing that game-breaking talent, right? Like that one guy that can, like, I guess it's probably not the right guy to use, but the Patrick Laine when he was scoring goals for the Jets back in the day there, you know what I mean? Like the guy that could just completely rip it open. Now the Jets have other options. That's, you know, they're lucky there, but the Canadians don't have an Ehlers or anyone else that can really fulfill that role. So it's exciting, Ezra, and I think the key here is that he's doing it the right way. Every single guy I've spoken to, I spoke to his coach a few times this summer, a few times during the season. He's saying, like, this kid's putting together a 200-foot game. It's not, and I kind of hate that term because I don't want Cole Caulfield to be a 200-foot player. I want him to be a 60-foot player. Like, I want him to be in the offensive zone at all times. But his coaches are saying, like, yeah, you like the level of effort that you're putting on back check will make sure you survive in the NHL. So one will make sure he thrives. That's the goal. One will make sure he survives. So he's been playing a much, much better game. And Habs fans have never had a prospect like this. Like, we all know. I mean, going back, I hate to use a name, but Guy Lafleur is probably the last guy that's gotten fans that's excited. So now we all remember what happened to Guy Lafleur. Yeah, exactly, right? And that's the thing. You don't want to use that name, but Guy Lafleur didn't really start producing until year four. So there has to be a little bit of grace period there. But hey, Ezra, so far it's just like it's magical, you know, the amount of goals he's scoring. So I think next time a guy that puts up records with the development team and under 5'10", I don't think he'll fall to 15th next time. He'll probably
and, you know, just top five. And Mark, you know, I just wanted, but just to sticking with Cole Caulfield before, you know, Dave has is up next with a question, but, you know, we know that the potential is, as you say, it's absolutely sky high, but I guess, you know, the follow-up question I wanted to ask is, you know, how quickly could he get into the lineup? Because you mentioned Brendan Gallagher is obviously a player that you cannot replace. Like, he's a unique player in the NHL. Yeah. You hear that, you know, Montreal Canadiens heart and soul player, and he is. He just does things that few players in the NHL can do, and I don't necessarily know if that would, you know, have an impact on you know, whether, you know, Cole Caulfield comes up. But is there a chance that we could see Caulfield in the Canadiens lineup in the next, you know, couple of weeks?
I mean, yes, obviously there's a chance. And I think as long as it keeps going well, like, for example, the Rocket are playing in a few hours. If Cole Caulfield puts together another 2 points, it's not just that he's going to have to just put together a full game and really get to speed with a strategy. We saw he was getting on faceoffs. He was getting breakaways and he was creating a lot of chances, but there was some strategy issue in terms of his defensive positioning and you know, what to do without the puck, which is normal, guys. Like, he just made his pro debut. So yes, we could maybe see him in the Canadiens lineup. I don't see a rush because, again, I'm convinced the Canadiens will make the playoffs. So let him learn his craft in Laval, the pro game in Laval. Joël Bouchard is really good for that. Like, Joël Bouchard won't BS him. He'll tell him, like, hey, man, you can't do that. You can't do that if you want to make the NHL or keep doing this. So Bouchard is a really good guy to really introduce him to the pros. Yes, I think he will end up on the Canadiens roster, but there's no rush right now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms talking about the Montreal Canadiens, the Jets, and the Habs back in Montreal. Second game of a two-game series later on tonight. Marc Dumas, Montreal Canadiens special collaborator, is our guest on the program.
Well, Mark, I mean, my question is about the trade deadline, but I will make a mention. Laval was here in Winnipeg, and they steamrolled the Moose. I mean, some of the games were close, but, you know, to your point, what a benefit to be on that team right now. I mean, they've got such a nice mix of veterans, and they've been the talk of the Canadian division. I mean, they came into Winnipeg. I think they steamrolled Stockton. Then they beat the Moose, I think 3-4, and lost the one game in a shootout. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a Laval team that's just been on fire. So what a good environment for your young players to be learning from without the pressure of playing in the pros is to play on Laval.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen it before, right? Jesperi Kotkaniemi last year, he went back to Laval, and what happened there was that Bouchard, actually, what he does is every day he does video with players. So he brings them in the room and says, this is what you're going to have to do to make the NHL. This is not. So with Kotkaniemi, it actually opened up a conversation. Kotkaniemi was frustrated. He wasn't getting his answers in the NHL. But Dave, you know, the difference between the AHL and the NHL is that in the AHL, you have a lot more time to do these things. Mm-hmm. Coaches in the NHL, they're on a bus, you know, they get on their bus, they get on the plane, they're reviewing footage. There's a game. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to take it away from AHL players or coaches. I know they work hard, but you can answer more questions. And that's what happens. What happened in Laval is that he started answering questions. The players felt a lot more comfortable. And like you say, perfect environment. I really believe growing up in a winning environment is so important. And I know it's hard to control, but I believe that you start winning young and then you kind of just assume that you can win. It's not, I think we can win, is I think we should win. So yeah, I'm with you. And Dave, what I really like about that team, there's no superstars, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever, Caulfield might end up being really good, but you're talking about the Yannick Veilleux, Yolonen, you know, it's not like a team, Raphaël Harvey-Pinard. It's not a team that's loaded with first-round talent or 33-year-olds. Mm-hmm. So young team and exciting. And it's about time, if I'm being perfectly honest. The Canadians haven't developed much in terms of prospects. And this, they've been working very hard on it. And we're starting to see, you know, some fruits of their labor. But it's obviously, it had to be done. So it's finally exciting that the Canadians have a proper development program. Big time. Very exciting.
Well, you know, Mark, go ahead. No, I was actually going to get to the question I was going to ask Mark. Because it's great to win in Laval, and I agree with you. I think it's so important to give prospects that environment to be in. But what about the parent club? What do you see their strategy coming into Monday's deadline? Because again, folks in Montreal have been patient, but we know that's a fan base that's burning for some wins.
Patient for Montreal, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
let me just pull up our good friends at Cap Friendly here and see what we're working at real quick. Okay, because honestly, it's been moving so fast. Okay, so yeah, there's little to no cap space right now. Now, obviously, you can throw Gallagher on there and get your retroactive, your long-term injury. But that, if I remember correctly, that only comes in at the end of the season, right? So you still have to stay within the parameters of what you can spend on your cap. That being said, I don't see what Bergevin can do other than bringing like a game-breaking talent. Because again, I feel like Laval is kind of the same thing as the Habs. The Habs have a really balanced team, but no game-breaking talent. I don't see Bergevin doing much, Dave, honestly. I'm going to predict another depth defenseman. Probably like one of those guys that the analytics, you know, the nerds like me are saying like, yeah, he's good, but don't spend too much on him. And maybe a center. They just don't have, like, they really, I have to admit, they went, and excuse my language, and balls to the wall this year, and they really went at it to see if they can get there. Now, obviously, the injuries hurt, Dave, but the Habs have been lucky injury-wise. Like, they're one of the least injured teams. So, we knew going into it was going to be tight. We knew going into it there wasn't going to be much margin for maneuverability. If you can find a taker for Paul Byron or maybe Arturi Lehkonen, then you have more space. But, I mean, those guys are key parts of the roster right now. So, it's going to be interesting. Here's what I'll tell you, Dave, to stop my rambling. Whatever I'm assuming is the opposite. So I'm thinking there's going to be nothing. And Bergevin has this tendency to just, you know, like, oh, they think I'm going to do this. They go completely the other way. Do you guys remember with Gallagher? It was like, oh, there's a big issue. And then that night, boom, F you. Signed. I got him signed. Like, you know, like, so I took that personally type of Michael Jordan reaction. So I'm terrible at predicting what Bergevin is going to do. And I get the sense I'm going to be wrong once again.
Mark Dumont of the Montreal Canadiens, he's a special collaborator for the team, is joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Worth noting, you mentioned Paul Byron there, Mark. He does clear waivers. That just came out about 11 minutes or so ago. So the Habs had put him on waivers. He now clears waivers. So that gives them some maneuverability, some flexibility. They could, if they wanted to, try and bury that contract. And I believe they'd only cost them, I think, $1 million or $1.5 million based on the $3.4 million that's left on his contract.
Yeah. What is it?
It's like the next 2 years.
It's $1 million for that you can bury in the, or $1.2 two that you can bury in the AHL right now?
Something like that. I don't know the exact figure, but it does give them a little bit of flexibility, which is what every team is so desperate for, especially right up against the trade deadline. Right.
I guess, Mark, you have to score two. I was just going to say, you have to score two goals in order for Mark Bergevin to not put you on waivers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But is it the trade deadline's really Monday? Is that it's Monday? True.
This Monday, 2 days from now. You had no idea, right?
No, like I had an idea, but wow, man, like it's going to be boring, isn't it? It's going to be like really, really boring, right?
Yeah. Yes. I don't know. I mean, every time we say it's going to be boring, it's usually not. Now, I don't think we're going to see, you know, superstar moves. I mean, you know, but there's going to be enough maneuvers that it's going to keep us talking about things. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, going to let us say, you know, how does this recalibrate the playoff race or how does this change playoff fortunes? And, you know, I think isn't that all you really want out of a trade deadline largely?
Yeah, well, and also to make fun of Buffalo, but I'm starting to feel bad about Buffalo. You know, I have this theory that Buffalo, the city itself, was like a project by God to see how much, like, you know, pain he can inflict on sports fans. So, I can't wait to see who Kool-Aid mans their way out of Buffalo as they hear, oh, you got traded. Boom, they're through the wall. And let's see where they go from there.
To that point, I mean, Eric Staal obviously now on Montreal, having, you know, escaped from Buffalo, which would be a great horror movie.
I'm sorry, Buffalo fans. I'm so sorry.
Did you get a sense of relief from him, though? I mean, they were mired in that horrendous losing streak. It's a team going nowhere. It's a franchise in shambles. You know, did you get that sense that, you know, he was just happy to be anywhere other than Buffalo?
You go from, I mean, arguably the worst situation in hockey to scoring a game-winning goal. I know the fans weren't there, but
yeah,
I mean, you're scoring a game-winning goal at the Bell Center, right? Like, it doesn't, it gets, and I know we're so arrogant. We say, ooh, at the Bell Center, but these guys actually do really like, you know, it's like for them, they always have that picture of being the guy, the enemies of the Bell Center. So for them, it's a nice change. But what I really liked, I'd say, yeah, obviously I think the big winner of this trade here is Eric Staal, you know, by far. But what I really liked, and it shows how it's not his first rodeo, is when someone said, what are you going to do with the game-winning puck? And he's like, I don't know. My kids are going to do something with it. You know, just like, you know, I've won a lot. A game-winning goal isn't a big deal. But right now, the Canadians need a little bit of that confidence, guys. It's actually a fairly young club. And, you know, I look at him as kind of like the Shea Weber as a forwards in terms of the amount of respect he brings around the league. So he does need to produce. That'll be key. But right now, Eric Staal has fit seamlessly into the roster. And, you know, speed aside, I'm really liking what I'm seeing from him. And obviously, his attitude, I mean, I think, I haven't had a chance to speak to him, guys, but I think he likes it a little bit better playing for a team that wins more than once every 72 days.
You know,
yeah, Mark, go ahead, Drew.
You know, you talked about this before in the previous answer. We were talking about what's going on in Laval, and they don't sort of have that game breaker. And you look at this Montreal Canadiens team, and especially compared to Winnipeg, Toronto, and Edmonton, you know, Winnipeg's got Mark Scheifele, they got Kyle Connor, you know, as what you would call game breakers.
Yeah.
You know, Toronto, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, you know, the Oilers, McDavid, and Dreisaitl. Could that be sort of the Habs Achilles heel come playoff time, that as deep as Montreal is, and they have, I'd say, the, you know, second best depth maybe behind Winnipeg, you know, that lack of sort of maybe that superstar forward, is that maybe the asterisk next to the team name entering the playoffs?
Yeah, and it has been for a long time. I think that's the main issue. Now, I guess we kind of forgot about Carey Price, and that's fine too. It's okay to because his numbers haven't been there. If we're being perfectly honest, like, his numbers haven't been elite, but he still has that potential. So I think that'll come down in the playoffs. What I'm excited to see here, Drew, what might make up for that, and you're 100% right, is arrested Carey Price. We've never seen arrested Carey Price. This guy's exhausted by the time he gets to the playoffs. Like, I mean, he runs himself ragged, and you're getting the Lundqvist effect, which, great goalie in the regular season, but has nothing left in the playoffs, right? So that might be enough to compensate, but I'm with you, Drew. That's the biggest issue for the Canadiens, is that lack of a big game breaker. Now, because of the depth, when the Canadiens are rolling well, it's because you have guys like Toffoli's on the third line right now, you know? Josh Anderson's on the third line. Either way, that's new for the
good
Canadiens.
Third line player.
Right? Like, usually it's like Joe Blow from Laval is on the third line right now. And, you know, he scored 13 goals in Zurich 12 years ago. And, like, we're hoping he rekindles some of that. But for now, they have, even Paul Byron, people are crapping on him. This guy scores goals. Like, this guy's a goal scorer. So hopefully the good part about that is it's a lot easier to game plan against high-end talent. Like, for example, if you stop Dreisaitl and McDavid, which, I mean, the Habs have done it, but it's been super lucky. If you stop them, the Oilers have nothing left, right? So the advantage is, for the Habs at least, is that it's harder to game plan and really stop. You can't just stop one line. So that is a plus.
Yeah, and you know, to play devil's advocate, and Drew's right. I mean, that the Habs do not have Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews or Mark Scheifele, but I would counter that and say Toffoli's got 19 goals. Josh Anderson's got 14 goals. Corey Perry is tied with Patrick Laine as far as goals go with 9, right? So that's 40 plus goals right there. So I don't think that the Canadians have, you know, a lack of. Exactly. And you throw in Eric Staal, and even though he doesn't replace Brendan Gallagher completely, he's also a guy, you know, that can score goals at the ripe old age of 36. So yeah, it's committee, and you know, that's how the
playoffs
are
that
win.
Becomes an issue, right? Committee becomes a bit of an issue in the playoffs. I feel like you need that guy in the playoffs to just kind of like, hey guys, get on my back. Like, I'm going to do this. And yeah, you're right. The Habs don't have that right now, unless it becomes Carey Price, but I'm with you. Even Jeff Petrie, I mean, he hasn't scored in a while, but he's outscoring most forwards in the NHL right now, and that's, you know, that's pretty good for a defenseman.
And we already talked about this earlier. Caulfield's going to score a hat trick tonight for the Canadians. So
right, yeah, he's going to play for Laval this afternoon. Then he's going to go. Yeah, exactly. He's going to. You know what I'm worried about is that I'm worried that he goes a week with like a few. I mean, here's how much pressure there's been on him, and I'm part of. I hype him. I hype because I love having fun with prospects, but a lot of guys still don't think he'll make it in the NHL because he only had 5 points in 7 games at the World Junior Championship. Like, that's like, you know, in this situation, like,
analysis right there,
right? Like, he's never going to play these guys again. He's never going to be on that team again. And so what if he put up a 4 spot against Austria, you would have been happy. Like, anyways, I know this is completely off topic, but I'm going to stop analyzing anything that has to do with the World Juniors. And as soon as guys start putting out numbers, like people are doing actual analysis on this, I will block them. Screw you. Let me enjoy my hockey. It's fun hockey. We don't like, and I'm a big nerd, but once in a while, just let me relax and enjoy my hockey. And that's what the World Junior Championship should be. I'm not worried about Cole Caulfield because he only got 5 points in 7 games.
No, it's absolutely ridiculous, Mark. And, you know, if you're going to doubt him, then you do it at your own peril, because all this guy, there's a reason you don't call somebody Cole Caulfield unless you've earned that title. All he does is score goals. So it's absolutely ridiculous to use 5 points in 7 games at the World Juniors as indicative of anything. I wanted to ask you, you know, we were talking about this earlier. There's a really good chance that the Canadians and the Maple Leafs are going to play in the first round. And I've you know,
I'm so sorry, Canada. I'm sorry in advance, Canada. I apologize to the entire country. The two most, let's call them intense fan bases or loudest. Well, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm just sorry.
No, you don't need to apologize, because this is going to be fascinating to me, because we, like, when was the last time these two teams have played in the playoffs? Like, it's been a really long time, you know, forget the first round. So
it's a rivalry in name only right now. You need
absolutely,
you know, you need playoff appearances against each other to build a rivalry. So yeah, it'll be huge if it happens. I think, and I'll tell you right now, the Leafs don't want to play the Habs. They actually want to avoid them. Like, I've spoken to a few guys that work for them, and they're like, that's like that perfect situation where, you know, like, oh man, it's going to be hell to play them. And everyone's expecting us to win. So, like, if you win, no big deal. And if you lose, it's embarrassing. So, yeah.
Everybody outside of Toronto, though, Mark, everybody outside of a Leafs fan is a Canadiens fan during that series. There's no, I mean, you know, I have no ill will towards Montreal or to Habs fans, you know, compared to Leafs fans and on the obnoxious level, there's no comparison at all. The Leafs fans are on their whole other platform. That's why, you know, I think outside of Toronto and outside of Leafs fans, you know, everyone else is going to be say, go Habs, go in that series.
I think so, but there's also that whole east of Canada. It's ABC, right? Anyone but the Canadians. So that stems from the 70s. So I get that. I feel like we're the lesser of two evils in this situation. So yeah, absolutely. But the other side of me, I like when the Leafs do well. It's good for the league. I also love when they you know, fail miserably in the playoffs. So that'll be, you know, another exciting thing to see there. But it'll really be, if they play the Habs, it reminds me of like the early MMA matchups, completely stylistic difference, right? You have the depth versus top heavy. And the Leafs, if we're being perfectly honest, I'm not sure if they're well suited for playoff hockey, you know. they're big boys, but they're not exactly the toughest group there. So we'll see how that goes. But the Canadians can't, what they did at the beginning of the year, they start fooling themselves into thinking they're big and tough. They got to get away from that a little bit too. They have to rely on their skill there. So if they try to go full grit against the Leafs, it might not work out that well.
You know, Mark, we had Matthew Mamoose head coach Pascal Vincent on about 2 weeks ago. And we were talking, and we were to your point about Cole Caulfield, we were talking about draft and the allowing players to kind of develop. And he said, we don't live in an Amazon, order it and 24 hours later, they're here. And I thought that was a great way to kind of phrase
it. Bouchard uses that line all the time. It's hilarious.
And it must be a French, I was going to say, it must be a French coach thing.
When I asked Joel Bouchard, I said, give me an example of a really good program that you would say is developing. And right away, he was pointing to Pascal, right? And he was saying, like, mm-hmm. listen, that's how. There's no miracle. It takes time, but you need to have that strong development program. And what I like about Vincent is that he comes up with a game plan with every single player. It's so much work, but that's the new breed of coaching, right? And the moment that he's available, Montreal will be pouncing on him to get him in the organization. So hold on to him as hard as you, as much as you can, because the Habs are licking their lips right now looking at Pascal Vincent. I mean, I don't know how long until he's in the NHL, but I doubt it'll be too long.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. And I just want to ask you quickly, you know, a couple of former Jets were on the ice this morning in UL Armia and Ben Chiarot. So how close are they?
Armia was on the ice? Oh,
yeah, Armia was on the ice. So, I mean, how much of a benefit will that be for the organization to get a couple of players?
And Michael Frolik, right?
Yeah, that's right. Can't forget about Michael Frolik.
It'll be, I mean, Armia puts everyone to shame when it comes to board battles, right? I mean, you guys saw it. Like, this guy's just it's weird how he can't win open ice battles. Like, it's really weird, but board battles, holy crap, he's good. And his puck retrieval ability because of it is just huge. But now here's the thing, Dave. Right away, you're going from, I don't even know who's on their fourth line right now. And Ben Chiarot, I mean, essentially, whoever's on their fourth line, who, you know, I guess is probably Frolik right now, he'll be shifted out, and you obviously have Armia that comes in, which is having him on your fourth is amazing. Mm-hmm. Ben Chiarot, once he gets, and here's the issue, guys, is that he was playing amazing for the Habs, and then they start to think, like, oh, maybe he's a tough guy. You know, maybe he has to stop fighting. It's as simple as that. He's not, like, he goes for the kill. He goes for that kill shot. And kill shots on helmets, guys, it breaks hands, right? But the effect of Ben Chiarot here is that Joel Edmondson drops down to the third pairing. Otto Leskinen, have you guys ever heard? Oh, well, Dave, I mean, you've watched Manitoba. Yep. But Otto Leskinen's in the lineup right now. Don't get me wrong. Love the kid. But if you could drop an Otto Leskinen and put a Ben Chiarot, it would be gigantic to me, Dave. And that'll be their biggest deadline acquisition, is getting a guy like Chiarot back. Mm-hmm. But he's got to get back to just playing his solid, simple game. Not to criticize him, I went for a run yesterday and I bruised my lung. It's the most amazing thing I've ever managed to do. So I shouldn't criticize an athlete, but he needs to play within, his capabilities, basically, essentially, just play that simple game and it'll work out. When him and Weber are playing a simple game, they're really tough to beat.
Did you fall, or did the running motion bruise your lung?
I'm such an out of shape piece of crap that, like, literally, and also at first I started running. I'm like, oh my God, do I not know how to run? Like, I literally, like, I'm like, what's happening with my legs? They're going like round and round like a duck. And then it was fine. And also the other part is I'm a smoker. I'm a dirty smoker. So that part isn't great. But I got home and I was like, ow, like, did I bruise a rib while running? Like, is that's not possible? And then I called a friend of mine who's a doctor, and we did like an over the phone test. And he's like, yeah, you bruised your lung. He's like, that's a really good sign that you need to go running a little more often than once every 2 years. So I ordered two large Poutines, two large Pepsis, and I took it easy last night. Everything's going A-okay.
Ezzy, you have something?
No.
I can ask something. I was going to ask Mark. Sure. I mean, I was going to ask you what street were you going down? Was it Sherbrooke, or was it?
It was actually Sherbrooke, and then it was back down on Monkland. I didn't make it far enough for it not to be called Sherbrooke anymore. But the thing is in Montreal right now is that we're back on curfew. Like, it really, really, really is rough. I live alone, so I mean, the other part of it is that we're all in tiny apartments here. Like, we're all jammed up against each other. So the parks, going outside is really, really important. The funny part is now everyone's jammed outside in the park. So, you know, it's really hard to avoid people, but you can tell people just need, like, look how white my skin is. If I would jump in the St. Lawrence right now, they'd say, oh, the belugas are back there. You know what I mean? So like, I need sun. I need some activity, but it is actually jam packed on the streets right now in Montreal. Like it's just this weird thing. And then at 8 o'clock, it goes silent. It goes into Montreal, becomes, well, Ottawa, essentially. So it's, you know, and I grew up in Ottawa. I'm allowed to say that. You guys aren't allowed to say that.
I lived in Ottawa.
I have family in Ottawa.
There you go. Well, you guys all know you can go.
I also have a lot of family in Ottawa.
You can go to Bank Street midnight on a Saturday. Me and my buddy Will, who now lives in Toronto, and we're like, wow, this is really our city. Eh? We'd climb up onto the roofs, and we're like, wow, midnight on Bank Street, nothing, literally nothing. But yeah. I kind of miss my city right now. If I'm being honest, I do miss Ottawa, minus the fact that, you know, their hockey team is held together by string. But other than that,
team's in Canada, so you don't have to worry about that.
Hey, I get touchy about that because it got, you know, we attached it all together. But no, you're right. It is absolutely Canada. You know, the worst part is I actually want the Sens to do well. Like, and my boss keeps telling me, she's like, no, you don't. You know, she's really smart. She's from Ottawa too. But she told me, she's like, you're a Habs fan now. You know, until your contract's over, and it's true, you have to be a Habs fan. But I do secretly want Ottawa to do well. Like, I honestly feel bad for Ottawa fans at this point. I feel like they deserve some sort, not a Buffalo level yet, but man, they deserve just some happiness, right? Like,
it, you know what, Mark? It's amazing. You talk about Buffalo, you talk about Ottawa, and we'll let you go quickly here. You know, it's amazing what ownership and stable ownership and good ownership does to a franchise. Because, you know, we see that in Buffalo, the Pegulas have been a disaster since they bought the team, and they were supposed to usher in a whole new wave of success. And I mean, that success has now been seen by the Buffalo Bills, but it took a long time. But, and then you Ottawa, I mean, the less said, the better about Eugene Melnick and his ownership of the Senators. But it really is amazing culture and the organization that's built from ownership down all the way through to the players on the ice, and how when that's amiss, how it totally derails the performance on the ice.
I think the example of the best bosses are the ones that kind of, and I mean, it's such a harsh thing, but it just write the checks and shut up, right? I mean, like, I know Jeff, if you're listening right now, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say that, but I will use Jeff.
He does listen to the show, by the way, Mark.
Yeah, I'm absolutely. You know what's funny? He keeps asking me, he's like, hey man, can you send me a copy of the podcast? I'm like, yeah, you paid for it, like, you can have it. But I'll say this, he stays out of the hockey side. He's a big hockey fan. He'll approve big decisions, but he's not the one that's coming in and Melnicking his way around. So I have to give him props, and I believe it's a lot of the same over in Winnipeg. So the best owners are the ones that, you know, you just don't know that they're really around. That's really the ones that are just fans and let the team do their stuff. But again, let's not talk about Melnick, because I like that. There's a lot about Mitch. I was going to say Mitch Melnick, but that's the wrong Melnick.
No,
Eugene Melnick, that I'm not a big fan of that guy. Let's just put it that way.
There you go. Mark Dumont is a Montreal Canadiens special collaborator, and that's his part-time job. His full-time job is apparently stand-up comedian based on
today's performance
on the show. I mean, that's it's sad, right, guys? Like, you guys never bruised a lung while running, right? Like, that's not...
Well, if anyone, Mark, if any of us could, it would be Ezzy.
Right?
Well, Ezzy would be our candidate for that.
Come on. If you saw Ezzy running down the street, you would immediately just crash your car, because you know, it's a sight for sore eyes and a sight that I don't think any eyes have ever seen.
Okay, but at least, and this is my final, I would actually, when I was walking to start running, okay, and I got to a red light, I was holding my breath so the strangers beside me didn't know that I was completely out of breath just from like a brisk walk. I was literally like, I was suffocating myself just so these strangers didn't know that this fat half Irish, half French guy is completely out of energy from having walked down the street. So, yeah, that's essentially where I'm at physically right now. Things are going really well.
I think there's, you know, well, just hold on 1 second, Drew. I think there's one thing we got to set up here. When COVID is all done, I haven't been in Montreal since 2018, but I like to go every year or a couple of years. I have a really good friend, lifelong friend that lives there. When I'm there, we should go for a run, and then we'll have a few smokes after.
Exactly. We'll do the Guy Lafleur style there. Yeah, exactly. A heavy shift and a couple of cigarettes in between. Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Ezzy's got two kids. He's not going anywhere anytime soon, aside from maybe to a playground. That's
I have to take my kids to Montreal. Hey, I always say this. It's the best city in Canada, in my opinion. I love Winnipeg. So, second best city.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I think it's different when you live here, but it's really nice to visit. I'd say that. And I think we're going to get a lot of visitors once this is all said and done, and a lot of people in the park. Because, yeah, like I say, the city right now is just, usually we're out till 6 a.m. Now we're sitting at home smoking our cigarettes until 6 a.m. wondering, like, is there fun happening? So, yeah, it's been rough, but, you know, better times ahead. Let's all hope that there's a lot better times ahead.
Absolutely.
We'll let you get back to your butts and hopefully some leftover poutine. Mark Dumont is a Montreal Canadiens special collaborator. Always a great friend of the show. Guys.
I actually do have leftover poutine, like a full one. There's a 2-for-1 deal on. I'm not even joking. I could go get it and show it to you right now.
If you throw some St. Viateur bagels in there, I will get on the next flight.
Hey, I'll say this. The bagels in Montreal, maybe. Oh, actually, I was going to say they're overrated, but I don't want to get run out of the city. So let's. And, the bagels are amazing, and I'm so sorry. Je m'excuse, tout le monde. Je m'excuse.
Thank you, Mark.
Have a good one, guys.
Enjoy tonight's podcast. We'll do it again real soon. Take care.
Cheers. There thanks, guys.
There you go. Mark Dumont joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was funny. Mark's appearance on the show is brought to you by our good friends, and this is fitting, at Boston Pizza, home of the BP Game Day Meal Deal. Choose two of your favorites, medium gourmet pizzas, or add a triple order of Boston's famous wings, tube dipping sauces, all for $54.99. Available for takeout and delivery only at bostonpizza.com or download the My BP app.
Final thoughts. I just placed my order and have a nice little lunch.
Hold on.
Courtesy of BP.
You got to put up that comment. That's the best comment I think I've seen of the day. Matthew Thompson, if I saw Ezzy running in the same direction, if I saw Ezzy running, I would run in the same direction because he's running away from something.
You know what? That comment is fair enough. But, you know, you guys know this. I have completed the Manitoba Marathon Relay twice.
That is true. As he was a bit of a runner in his day.
I mean, I stopped for a Bernstein's Deli sandwich both times, but I still completed the race.
Which is remarkable because the route is nowhere near Bernstein's Deli, but you found a way to get there. That was the impressive
dedication. Took a cab and then I came back.
That's right. There you go. That's the best way to run a marathon is in the back of a cab. Okay, gentlemen, give me some final thoughts from both of you.
Okay, I'll give you a final thought. Final thought is we still got a lot of people in this chat and we still need a lot of likes to go. So let's get that like button up. Let's see people.
Smash it.
Smash it, like it on the way out before you go and get it on your Saturday. I think that it's going to be an interesting few days. I think you need to stay tuned to IllegalCurve.com, the Illegal Curve Twitter, our Instagram, all the social media platforms we have, because there's going to be a lot of Jets stuff and we will have it all. Jets, we didn't even mention it yet, that Jets signed draft pick Simon Lundmark, a Swedish defender who's playing over in Sweden right now in the Swedish Hockey League. They signed him to his 3-year ELC yesterday. I don't expect people have been asking. I don't think with the depth the Jets have, the Moose have, sorry, on D, that he'll necessarily be there next year. I think he might play one more year in Sweden and then come over. With Euro contracts, there's always some sort of language in that regard. So we'll see what happens in that with that realm. But I mean, again, there's another prospect and that they've added to the list. So that's one that you should take note of. Drew, you're trying to jump in.
I was just going to say, I believe that if they didn't sign him pretty soon, he was going to become an unrestricted free agent.
No, so I think it's Santeri Virtanen. I think is the one you're thinking of. He's June 1st. I don't think because Lundmark they just drafted in 2019. So I think
was he 19 or 18.
I have it on a little.
I could be wrong. I know.
Virtanen. They have to. Lundmark was 2019. Okay. Don't question my knowledge, Duke. What are you doing here? So I think Virtanen is the one they have to. Who's injured right now. Henry Nikkanen, another draft pick. He kind of heated up. He's got 3 assists in his last 2 games. He's a 2019 fourth rounder. He's a guy I think people need to keep an eye on. He's a guy who could have some could what's this?
Sorry.
Oh,
I'm just seeing the comments from the guys. Sean's headband. That's what my final thought is going to be for anybody who didn't see Kenny and Rennie's post-game show on Thursday night. Sean was rocking his best Axl Rose headband. So the fact that somebody made their name Sean's headband is unbelievable.
That's actually the best. I got to tell you, and I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again because it's important to reiterate this point. People don't understand how much we love this format. I mean, it was done out of necessity. But it has absolutely become the It's over. I can't.
I haven't worn pants in 2 months.
Yes, I believe me. Ezzy showing up to my house without pants isn't something I love. But the reality is, like, people don't understand.
Straight from my house and my gotch.
How much more we can appreciate the interactivity that we have with people, because we would get text messages to the hotline that Drew would read on air. We would get tweets, but it's so much different now to have the conversation, which sometimes is taking part completely separate from what the three of us are talking about, and people are having dialogue amongst themselves. And sometimes it's involving us like it is now, but just like the idea that people have created. And again, it's not just us. I know Sean Reynolds and Ken Weeb, Kenny and Rennie, they're loving it. They do pre and post. They do their Friday morning show. And the level of community that has sprung up is so much fun. And we have such a good time with it. And these comments are just, they're hilarious. And you guys get to see it because we actually, as you can see me laughing during it. So again, I just want to thank everyone for joining us this morning and every Saturday morning and during the post game shows.
And boys, I think the big question is, you know, we're going to be doing our post game show after the Jets Canadians game. And obviously, Weber and Sean are going to be doing their post game show. The question is, like, is Sean going to have the same headband or is it going to be a different color? Like, is there a sponsorship deal in the works? Like, people are talking about that headband.
Well, yeah, I think he got an offer, Ezzy. I think there was he had a friend of his in Southern Zubaz? Manitoba. No, I don't think it was Zubaz. That would be more your style, I think. But I think Sean had some sort of endorsement offer, some sort of hat. Someone who makes product wanted to make him a branded Kenny and Rennie headband. So we'll see if he rocks that, and that'll be great if he does.
There you go. On that note, we'll thank everybody for joining us this.
I guess we're gonna see everybody.
Good segue, Drew.
We're gonna see everybody in like 7 hours, anyways.
That's what I was gonna say. The Illegal Curve post game show when the Jets and the Habs finish up tonight, right around, I'm gonna guess 8:40, maybe 8:45, somewhere in that vicinity. Come back to our YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe, hit the thumbs up, ring the bell, whatever it might be. Be sure to do that. You'll get alerted each and every time we go live here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and then later tonight on the Illegal Curve post-game show. Want to give a shout-out to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Boston Pizza. Support them because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our guests, Jason Bell and Marty Bird. That was the bird that was on his shoulder. It's been a hell of a show, I got to tell you. You know, we had a guest with a bird on his shoulder, you know, 2 hours ago. So all bets are off. Scott Burnside joined us in hour number two to talk about the NHL trade deadline. And of course, Marc Dumont in the last 30 minutes or so to talk about the Montreal Canadiens. Thanks so much to everybody. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll see you later tonight for the Illegal Curve post-game show.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk.